Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt and Clint Longnecker, I'm John Manuel. Clint is trying to steam us out of this doggone conference room with his space heater.
It's 84 degrees outside today, and Clint's got his space heater going, and he's wearing a jacket in this conference room.
He's got a t-shirt on, collared shirt, and a Metropolitan Baseball Classic jacket, and a space heater. It's an outrage. And
I miss Florida.
But the reason for this is, A, Clint misses Florida, and B, he was at every summer showcase this summer. But in the between covering summer showcases at Area Codes, East Coast, East Roast Showcase, as they used to call it, PG National, basically you name the showcase, he was there, both big All-Star games. Clint also did a lot of summer college baseball coverage and a ton of Team USA coverage. I mean, he shadowed Team USA until they went to honkball and Cuba. Aaron Fitt, of course, headlines our college coverage, and that included marshaling all of our forces for our, 18 Summer College League top prospect lists?
We did 20-plus Team USA.
So we got 20-plus Team USA. So Summer College Baseball growing like a weed.
Yeah.
And I would love to be the guy with the roundup, but summer College Baseball is here to stay until the college baseball season ever is played during the summer. So while I have my issues with summer college baseball and the leagues, many of the leagues, a lot of the leagues do, Aaron, do a great – A, there's more than 120 years of tradition in the Cape Cod League. Similarly long tradition, not that long, but a lot of tradition in the Alaska League. You have 20 years and more than a million fans now have gone to Northwoods League games over the years, which is ridiculous and a great experience for those players to get to see what pro ball – get a taste of what pro ball is like. So summer college baseball certainly has its downsides, and I kind of wish it didn't exist. I wish that summer baseball, college baseball, would have played in the summer. But there are a lot of great things. What's your biggest takeaway, I guess, annually from summer college baseball? Is it more what it leads to in the next draft, or is it more as an indicator of what it leads to for the next college season? Which do you weigh more? Are they kind of, or is it a tie in your mind?
It really depends what league you're looking at. You know, I mean, if we're talking about talent level for the next year's draft, which is why all these scouts spend all, you know, so many resources scouring the Cape Cod League. I mean, every organization has a lot of different scouts that they run in there. I mean, area scouts, cross-checkers, scouting directors spend a lot of time in the Cape. And there's a reason for that. It's because, you know, as we've seen, there's just a gluttony of top-round guys that come out of that league every year, and the same with Team USA. I mean, so when you're talking about the Cape and Team USA, extremely valuable for looking at the next year's draft class. All the rest of the leagues, and the Northwoods is valuable for looking at guys who will be in the Cape and USA next year
right.
and have a chance to be first-rounders in a couple of years. Don't have a lot of guys in Northwoods who are elite guys for the following year's draft. That's just a fact. But
yeah.
But it's still, you know, I mean, it's a good place to see freshmen who are gonna develop. It's a good place to see second-tier prospects from a draft standpoint.
Yeah, 6th to 15th rounders, basically,
exactly.
is what you're looking
exactly.
at.
Exactly. That's kind of the sweet spot for the Northwoods League. But, you know, but for most of these leagues, we're talking about you might have a couple of guys here or there that have a chance to you know, make a splash in pro ball. A lot of the guys on these lists, on these lower-tier leagues, have a chance to be good college players, and that has value. You know, it has value identifying those guys, but it's not necessarily the same value as identifying the top guys in the Cape.
Right, and the one thing that has definitely changed in this, and Clint, you can definitely chime in on this as well, is that it used to be most of your summer leagues, your top pitchers often would throw 40, 50 innings in summer college ball. I mean, I remember, I use this anecdote too often, but I'll say it again. Jeremy Sowers threw 60 innings back-to-back summers in the Cape after he was Vanderbilt's number one starter as a Friday guy as an unsigned first-round pick his freshman and sophomore years. And you can go back in the USA Baseball archives to past seasons when the collegiate national team played more robust schedules in terms of more higher number of games, and they would play, you know, or they would have a starting pitcher who would go. You know, we had, I remember Bobby Brownlee in 2001 throwing a complete game, last game of the summer for Team USA. And you can go back, Ricky Romero threw like 50-plus innings for Team USA one summer. Jared Weaver threw 47 innings in the summer 2003. That never happens for the college national team anymore. to those. Their schedule is more is a shorter schedule. A lot of their games are part of their trials that they play here in the Coastal Plain League. And Clint, as a result, it feels like, but despite that, I should say, it feels like USA Baseball still gets, for the most part, the cream of the crop of summer college players. You know, both of you guys want to touch on that, but if you're looking at the top of the CAPE list and the top of USA Baseball's list, I mean, last year's USA Baseball team, and you can lay this out, some, that was a historically strong USA college national team from a draft perspective. But so I guess maybe touch on that a little bit, and then maybe we can jump off into how this year's USA team measures up.
Yeah, just to kind of provide some of the numbers you talked about, the leader for Team USA this year in innings was Kyle Funkhauser with 28, and then just to run down our CAPE list, and how many innings those guys got. Walker Buehler, 28, Handhold, 28, Bickford, 27. Quite a few of the guys on the list. The majority of the guys were below 30 innings for this year. But yeah, for this year's USA team,
that's definitely changed. That I'll have to, while you guys talk about this, I'm gonna find an old almanac and I'll show you just how much that's changed.
And there were a few guys who were on the other end of the spectrum with Duchesne, Irwin, and Jacob Giacomi, who all had over 50 innings. But the plurality of the guys were below. But you talk about the Team USA, and they've always been able to get high caliber starting pitchers, and that's kind of the carrying trait for this year's club. You look at all the guys who were able to get some innings in the rotation this year, and they all have a chance to be top few round guys, if not the top two round guys for this year's class.
You know, and I feel like, I think you and I both think that this class, from a college standpoint, is pretty wide open at the top.
No question.
But, you know, we have a couple of these premier middle infielders, and I think one of the real strengths of this class, Clint, is at shortstop.
It's rare in the college class, but you're absolutely right.
It is, isn't it? I mean, because first of all, the top two guys, position players on your list for Team USA were Bregman and Swanson, who I think, you know, we both think have a chance to be shortstops in the big leagues. I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, you know, both these guys, they have things to prove, various, you know, I mean, you can take your pick on those two guys, but, and then you got, you know, in the CAPE, you got a depth of some shortstops. Richie Martin, Kevin Newman, TJ Hinojosa, you had Mikey White, you had Cal Simmons. All those guys made the CAPE list, and there were other shortstops who got some support in that league too. So, you know, I think it's surprisingly an area of strength for this class.
And you also had Ian Happ move to the outfield. There's still a chance, it sounds like, that he could play second base, although that hope is dwindling. But that's another athletic infielder who can hit potentially in this class. He's not a shortstop.
He strikes me at this point as more of like a Derek Fisher sort of a profile. I mean, he's not built the same as Derek Fisher, but I think he's going to be that athletic corner outfielder that brings some speed, a big time hit tool, some strength. Exactly. To me, that is how he's starting to profile.
And the infield doesn't matter as much. It doesn't seem like it. His bat. There's more certainty in his bat, than a lot of these other guys we're talking about. I do think that's a great jumping off point for the college class. A lot of these guys, not all of them, but a lot of these guys are in the Southeastern Conference. You have in our press release, Aaron, about how the SEC has the most players on this. But Dansby Swanson, Alex Bregman at the top of this USA team list, Richie Martin, then Mikey White, who are both in the top 15 in the CAPE list. Let's talk about those SEC and middle infielders really quick. I think after last season, Aaron, we came in expecting, like even from the day one, we walked out of the trials of the college national team, Clint, we walked out there expecting this to kind of be Alex Bregman's team. Aaron, he had an iffy spring, and he just wasn't consistent either this summer with the college national team, and he's not a classic profile guy. But I know you're a believer in Alex Bregman, so for listeners who want to be believers in Alex Bregman for their team toward the top of the 2015 draft, what do you base that belief on?
Yeah, I'm in on this guy. You know, this guy to me, first of all, he's going to hit. He hits. He always has. Even this year, I know it's cliche. People always, you always hear coaches say, well, yeah, he hit a lot of hard atom balls, you know. But the guy hits lasers all the time. And he sometimes you get a little bit less lucky. And I'm not saying, you know, that was all it was. But in the first half of the season, he had some bad luck.
Right.
He pressed a little bit. He got into a slump, and then it took him a while to dig out of it. But by the in SEC play, his numbers were, as you pointed out, were not very good. But he was better down the stretch than he was early. And you know, it's just the swing is just so compact, and it just he just has such a high frequency of hard line drive contact. And you know, I also believe in the defense. That's the other thing. I think he's a shortstop. You know, and I know it's not your prototypical rangy, ultra fast. You know, kind of
and the looseness.
Right. I mean, exactly. There is a little bit more effort to his actions, maybe than a guy like Swanson, where there is a lot more looseness.
Yeah.
More fluid player all the way around.
More fluid
classic swing.
Quick twitch athleticism.
Right. More fluid runner. Just, but at the same time, it feels like Bregman has pretty special hands, whether it's at the plate or in the field. That just feels like that's what makes him, that's a separating factor for him, it feels like.
And his ability, for me also, to throw accurately on the run from various angles, positioning, I mean, footwork. I just think a lot of that stuff plays up for him defensively. And for Swanson, you know, as much as you love the athleticism, and I love Dansby Swanson too, don't get me wrong, we need to see him do it at shortstop.
Right.
He seems like a guy where, you know, there could be a learning curve maybe. I mean, we could see him make a lot of spectacular plays at shortstop this year and also make – I suspect he'll make more errors than Bregman will.
Yeah, and some of the people who have actually seen him have history with him going back to high school. I think that is where he struggles actually, is on the balls in front of him. Because we know that he's got the range laterally, but they want to see how when he has time to really think about it. That's where they've seen him struggle in the past. That's going back a handful of years, so he's a different player now than that. But just to go back to Bregman, as you talked about, the frequency of contact, that's really one of the things that separates him. I mean, his strikeout numbers and his swing and miss rates are as good as any player in this entire class. I mean, you look at just over the course of his career, he's only struck out in 7.7% of his plate appearances, and you couple that, which, you know, with the hard-hit ability with that you spoke about earlier, that's a rare combination. It would not surprise you that come, you know, 2 months into the season that he's hitting high 300s, potentially low 400s, if he really goes out and stings the ball consistently as he's done throughout his career. And his contact rates are just, they're at a different level than everybody else in this class.
And I think that, so there's contact, but then like you said, Aaron, it's hard contact. He's a line drive machine. I feel like Swanson's that guy as well. I think the other, you guys are talking about the defense.
He has more swing in this.
And he does.
There's more length there too.
It's a longer, it's a longer swing. There's no doubt. I mean, it's just, I don't think he has as much impact offensively potential as Bregman, you know, unless there's some adjustments that are made. Do you think that the maybe I just obsess on this, and if I do, we can move on quickly. Is it going to be harder to evaluate him as he moves to shortstop because he's playing on that turf at Hawkins Field next year at Vanderbilt, or is that a minimal factor? What do you think on that, Clint? Or?
You know, that's a good question, you know, because – especially, you know, you look at infielders that come out of Texas.
Yeah.
Come out of, you know, I mean, Brandon Loy, field 989 every year, it seemed like. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, Texas and Duke and, you know, some of these programs tend to have great fielding percentages. And part of it is because they really emphasize that stuff. There's something to be said for coaching defense a certain way.
Certainly.
And there's something to be said for having turf that gives you a room service hop every time.
Yep.
And, you know,
but like you said,
that is a factor.
The question is for him is like the routine play, really, just being consistent. That should be easier on the turf for him. I just, you know, I still think he has, to me, I like Dansby Swanson's athleticism. I agree. I think that he has, the things that he has to prove are going to be a little bit harder for him to prove than Alex Bregman, where you see the elements of the swing and you see that high contact rate. And he does, when he hits the ball, its impact. You feel like that's a guy who should bounce back significantly next year. And then both those guys, I think, are, you know, going to be star college players in 2015. I would have to really collapse almost to not be first-round picks. Those are two of the safer bets of first-round picks for next year's draft, as these athletes who play in the middle of the diamond, we feel like at worst, Bregman's going to be an offensive second baseman, right?
I think he's, you know, and again, you hate to make these kind of comps, but I think there's a lot of Pedroia in him.
We've
know?
Heard it.
I mean, with
the, we're not the ones making it. Scouts are the ones making that comp, and they don't want to make it either.
Right. So anyway, I believe in that guy. I'm all in. I'm all in already. Four seasons even started.
So we've been talking about athletic SEC shortstops. Let's talk about Rich Marvis. He was someone who really, really impressed at the Cape workout day. He showed some power to his pull side there, showed some arm strength, and we know that he can run a little bit. Aaron, what did you think of him on the Cape this summer?
You know, he really helped himself on the Cape. Yep. I mean, I think people were pleased with what he did at shortstop, first of all, with his range and his instincts. His athleticism is really an asset. I mean, he can run. And he's, you know, he's smaller. He's not as tall as these other guys, even Bregman. I think he's even shorter than Bregman. But he is, again, compact. And I think that, you know, the swing works and he controls the strike zone fairly well. I mean, I think he's a nice overall package. Not as much power as those other two guys. But he does have some strength. He's certainly not a slap guy. You know, I think he'll hit a lot of doubles this year and some triples too because he can run, and a few home runs. But you know, I think it was tough to separate those shortstops. But I mean, he's got a little bit more of a live athleticism to him than Newman and Hinojosa have.
And he has the greatest chance to stay at shortstop too, which is a bit of a separating factor.
I mean, some people
think that Hinojosa is probably. Might be the best catcher in this class long term. This is a class right now that lacks in catching depth at the college level.
Yeah.
They think that that's where his career could end up. The defense really is just a separate factor for those.
Certainly won't happen at Texas.
But I'm going to throw a comp out there. This is not something I've heard from scouts. I'm just going to throw it out there.
It's an Aaron Fittism. If you don't like it, fall right back at you.
Take it with a grain of salt. But, John, you were talking today about how great you think Alex Mejia is and how good he's going to be in the big
great
leagues.
Great comp.
CJ Hinojosa, to me, is Alex Mejia 2.0.
Great comp. I love that comp.
He's a below-average runner with incredible instincts. It's easy to look at the body and kind of like, I don't know. You know, I'm worried about how he's going to project. But the guy's just a winner and a playmaker and a leader. And
I love that
that's
comp.
Who he is.
A guy that managers and coaches will value more than scouts unless a scout goes and sees over more than a week. You have to see. But like that Arizona team in 2012, when you saw – them play over and over again. Every time you talk to people, they're like, their infield is special. And it was Mejia and Mejia's Breen on the left side, knowing who to get what ball. They played on that crazy big field with a fast, hard infield. And that team excelled defensively. Wasn't Newman Newman wasn't the freshman second baseman on that team, was he? Or was he?
No, he wasn't.
It was a left-handed hitter guy. What's his name? Wilford Jackson?
No, it was the other guy.
You got drafted this year and can hit and can't field. I can't remember his name. Sorry, Arizona second baseman.
I know you're
you know right. Who I'm talking about. It's not Newman, but anyway, I can't remember his name. But Mejia I keep on hearing that just doing Florida State League calls because there's some toolsy athletic shortstops in that league, and I've had several managers say, don't forget Mejia. The guy Mejia over at Palm Beach was only there the first half of the season. That's another player that – the more you're around him, the more you see him play, the more people appreciate him. Hinojosa strikes me that way. He certainly rose to the biggest stage, Aaron, for Texas in the College World Series. And he may not have the tools that profile you at shortstop, but he does as that playmaking ability. That does impress me. Trent Gilbert, thank you very much. Well done.
Finally came to me.
You are the college beat writer. There it is. Now, is there, Clint, the middle infield for the U.S. was pretty much Swanson and Bregman after they, once they were there. We saw Mark Mathias play a little bit there. I don't know, Aaron and I think I made this comp to Aaron that he's like Ryan Wright from Team USA Pass, who's now in the Reds organization, more of a good college player. But he just intrigued me, again, as a guy who, he was there every time USA team needed a hit. And he wound up being their three-hole hitter for much of the summer. But he doesn't really – it doesn't seem like he profiles unless he can play second base.
No. And for him to come in and have the summer that he had, that was extremely important. Because he's someone – even in talking with high-level evaluators, they said that it was so critical that they got a chance to see him over extended plate appearances. Because you walk in, a cross-checker could kill him in a one- or two-day look.
Yep.
Because he just looks fairly ordinary. If you just see the BP, he doesn't really show the raw power. He doesn't run that great, and a lot of the different things to look for in terms of impact aren't there, but then you see him over the course of a week, the quality of the bats were by far the best of anybody on the team.
He had the best.
Up the middle swing.
Probably had the best approach on the team.
Yes.
He was patient.
Without a doubt.
He wasn't afraid to take a walk, but when he got into a count where he was going to get a fastball, he was ready to hit a fastball. I mean, it is fairly simple. It's hitting 101, but he was ready to hit a fastball, even with kind of an old school low hands a hands out away from the body approach.
Yeah.
I liked him.
No, he really came on. He impressed a ton of evaluators. A very well-respected scout said that they thought that he was not in terms of the overall player that he would become, but just of where he was at this point last summer was a lot like Sam Travis. There are some higher-profile position players on Team USA who are going to get more recognition but he took great at-bats, and the bat could end up becoming somewhere close to that because of the consistency that he brings. You know, you're going to get the ball in play a lot. And I mean, I just think back to that 14-pitch at-bat that he had there in Durham Bulls Athletic Stadium. And I'm not sure if there are many other guys on that team that could have done. And you question, you know, how much power is he going to hit for? Because he already has a kind of a fairly mature-looking frame and lower half. And the hands are going to have to get better defensively. But if he can just figure some of those things out, and if he can show a little more arm strength over at third base for that kind of fringe average to maybe average at best arm, he has a shot to go pretty good.
Yeah, like an older school profile for me, like David Bell, back when he played for the Phillies and Mariners, that was a guy who was like a second baseman who probably wasn't, he was better suited to third base when you played him at second, and the bat was better suited to second than it was at third base. But that there's a future for Mathias, and just in my mind, I know he played some first and some third, but he also started off playing second base basically every day, along with Blake Trahan until Swanson showed up. But then once Swanson showed up, that team pretty much took shape, really solidified things.
He's got a presence about him, and so does Carson Fulmer. I mean, that's, you know, that Vanderbilt team.
Yes.
Boy, you know, and that's something that jumps out here when we're looking at the summer college rankings is – Vanderbilt had seven guys on all these lists. Five of them on the Cape and Team USA, which is crazy. That just shows you the kind of high-level talent that this team is bringing back from last year's national championship team.
That's insane.
And you know,
And they lost talent. They had talent. They're not losing insignificant players. They're losing some of their key guys. They're starting shortstop. They're basically the guy was mostly their number one starter in Tyler Beede. I mean, they lost significant players from a national championship team. They lose the home run hero of the championship game as an NDFA, and they're still going to have plenty of talent coming back.
Yeah, they're loaded.
If you haven't heard, yes, John Norwood signed with the Marlins for, $235,000, something like that.
In that neighborhood, I think. It might have been $250,000.
Yeah. It was a lot of money for an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they had a lot of money left.
They did. The other Marlins
did. And that's a guy that, he played well in the Cape.
He really stood out in the Fenway workout.
Yeah, exactly. He's got physical tools for sure, and he matured a lot over the course of this spring. But, you know, that's one thing that Vanderbilt really does so well. Not to get sidetracked here, but, you know, to me, and I wrote about this, I think, in Omaha this year, but just the way that Norwood and Ravenel, two guys that came in as kind of tooled-up prospects that were raw, in the first 2 years, neither of them really contributed that much. Right. And by the time they were juniors, and especially the second half of the junior year, they were key players on a College World Series team. And Adam Ravenel is out there getting the final outs to preserve the national championship. And Norwood's hitting a CWS-winning home run. Great programs, you know, develop talent. And they do that. And, you know, they've got so much talent coming back. And again, just the makeup with Swanson and Fulmer. I mean, it's just...
The coaching staff, they could not stop raving about both those two guys, especially Ray Birmingham. To hear him talk about Swanson, just the reverence that he had, the energy that he played the game with, and just the quality of the individual, it was really fun to just listen to him talk about Swanson.
Well, let's talk about some of these other shortstops that were in the Cape. We've touched on Kevin Newman and then Mikey White, Kai Simmons out of Kennesaw State. I guess I'm most familiar with Mikey White, having done him, worked him up for our draft coverage out of high school. It sounds like, again, the profile is, from the pro level, is probably offensive second baseman. From the college side, though, Aaron, this sounds like the guy who can be your two- or three-hole hitter, your everyday guy. He's like, you're going to wear the C on the shirt for the captain's, your team captain. He sounds like the kind of guy you could potentially build a College World Series team around. Is he that good of a college player?
I think he is. I think he's, you know, he's to me, he's a lot like Nolan Fontana. I mean, not quite as athletic, probably, as Fontana was. I mean, I think Mikey White is a second baseman at the next level.
Yeah.
But you can put him in shortstop, and I think he'll be all right. You know, the foot speed is what's lacking there, and the arm is good but not great. But you know, you talk to scouts, and that was, to me, the thing that really jumped out about Mikey White is you hear it from coaches, sure, but then you hear it from scouts, and scouts say this is a guy that's going to be a big leaguer, and you're going to win with him in the big leagues because he's a winning player. And you hear that time and time again from coaches and scouts. It means something.
That's what makes me think, like, from a SEC perspective, that's going to be somebody very good is going to be left off the All-SEC team probably at shortstop. But Mikey White seems like a guy who as good as Swanson and Bregman are, would not shock me if Mikey White winds up being your first team All-SEC shortstop at the end, when it's all said and done next year, if he has a kind of offensive year that he's capable of, and if Alabama has a kind of team that, you know, his freshman class, now juniors, there's some depth to that class, some experience, some talent. You've got a whole, you know, Mitch Gaspard, Dax Norris, those Andy Phillips, they've got all their guys in there. It's this staff's team from top to bottom, and, you know, the turbulence of the end of the Jim Wells era is pretty much behind them now. They've got things kind of where they want them to be. I expect a big jump from Alabama this year. I wouldn't be, I mean, they kind of took it last year. I know they lost some pitching talent, but would not shock me, though, if Alabama
they
took that leap next year.
They were in my early eight for Omaha. So
there you go.
You know, and people raised some eyebrows, actually, when they saw that. But I believe in that junior class and in their sophomore class, too. But, you know, even in that SEC, there are other shortstops who were in the Cape who didn't make my 30. Logan Taylor from Texas A&M is kind of a, you know, a cheap five-tool guy.
Yeah.
A bit of everything.
Plays with some energy, too, right?
Energy. He's athletic. And then you've got A.J. Simcox, who's, I think, a premier defender at Tennessee. Needs to prove it with the bat. I think he had,
yeah.
I think he had, what, one extra base hit all year?
Yep.
I mean, in a full season, one double. I mean, that's almost impossible.
Well, just for reference sake, to go back
for
to my earlier
got a
point.
Big frame too. I mean, he's a legit exactly. 6'3".
And projected power for him coming out of high school.
Yeah.
I mean, where
right.
is it?
And in the Alaska League last summer, didn't he impact the ball last summer in Alaska fairly well?
I think it was more in terms of the extra base hits, not necessarily the home
right.
runs. But yeah, again, guys were projected.
Nothing
saw the body, the athleticism.
Nothing that made you think one extra base hit in the Cape.
No,
that wasn't in the Cape.
Oh, in the regular season. I'm sorry.
260 at bats.
That's right. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's kind of crazy. Yeah, it was hard for me to believe. I assumed you were talking about the Cape. One extra base hit.
Yeah.
Can't blame the BB Corps bats on all these. Can't blame it all on the BB Corps. Just as a point of reference, so this year you had guys in the 50-ish range of innings pitched in the Cape, right? So just 2008, Dallas Keuchel, according to just my quick look, led the Cape, 59 innings pitched. In 2003, you can go back, you can find Tim Stauffer, a big leaguer, 63 innings pitched. You go back to 1998, you had Ben Sheets throwing 68. But in the Valley League that year, John Roush threw 85 innings
wow.
in the Summer College League. And in the Northwoods League that summer, a guy named Josh Novotny threw 100. So you used to have the 80. It's easy to go 10, 15 years back and five guys throwing 80 innings annually in these summer college leagues, and that generally doesn't happen anymore.
No.
But I think that a big part of that is just the proliferation of leagues, and it's hard to find guys to throw innings. I mean, it's just harder, I think, to find guys who could do that for you. Let's touch on some of these other leagues real quick. We just mentioned the Alaska League as an aside because we just talked about the when we were talking about AJ Simcox. Actually, before I do that, I wanted to ask you guys about a couple summer small college quote unquote breakout guys from the summer. You certainly had some in the Cape, Aaron. Last year, I would say Ian Happ, even though he goes to Cincinnati, not a mid-major. But Ian Happ was kind of the breakout guy of the Cape last year. This year, I guess it's got to be Cody Ponce and Gio Brusa, right?
Yeah, I would say those two guys for sure. I think Kyle Cody did take a big step forward this year as it went from a guy that had the size and the arm strength but did not have the track record to really, you know, put himself in the conversation to be the number one overall pick early, you know, and there's a He's got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to prove. He's got to perform in the spring.
But he's got a big body. He's got the size. He's in the SEC.
It's a premium fastball and it's downhill with command.
Yeah, so he has these ingredients to go toward the front of a draft.
Yeah. And then, you know, Mark Brakeman.
He's
going
to have to
strike
out more than 6.5 per 9.
Yeah, he will. I mean, that's the big thing is he's got to miss bats. And
he's
got to
be the next Jeff Hoffman is what you're saying.
He pitched primarily with his fastball this summer. He didn't use his secondary stuff that much. But, I've seen him spin a decent breaking ball, and scouts have too. And I think there's some feel for a changeup too. I think he's more polished maybe than people will expect him to be.
Yeah.
But then, Ponce, of course, I wrote a decent amount about this summer. Mark Brakeman, for Stanford, took that step forward. So some of those guys really helped themselves. Garrett Clevenger.
Kyrie Washington, I guess, was the other guy. Just kind of from off the map to on the map.
Yeah.
Completely off the map.
And he's a complete X factor because he's so raw, and his feel for hitting and his swing and miss is a real concern. But his raw tools are huge. I mean, it's very exciting power-speed combination, especially the power.
And the power was just so easy. It was one of the easiest swings at the Cape workout day in Fenway. And he was putting balls out to straightaway center field, just really jumping off his bat. good-looking athletic body. Like Aaron said, he can really run. It was a 6.5 run time, even though we discount some of the Cape 60 times up there from this year. But, yeah, the strikeout rate, he struck out in, 28% of his plate appearances at Longwood. So this is going to be a very atypical guy to come
That's
out of
low
the college
major.
Class. This is kind of a high school or Latin sort of profile with the tools and with the rawness.
Yeah. Was there a jump-up guy on the USA team? I guess it's kind of a little bit harder. But it's like Dylan Tate kind of was that guy, Clint, like a guy who didn't have a huge reputation coming into the summer and made himself into a potential first-rounder.
Yeah. Well, I think he and Tyler Jay, both of those premier power arms coming in out of the pen. And I think evaluators had less history with Jay. A lot of people didn't even know who he was until that first day when he comes in and first pitch out of his hand is, 94, and he touches 96 in that outing. And he has a chance to be one of the top left-handers in the entire class. Everything really depends on what role he's going to be used in come next spring. And there's already been rumors that he might pitch on Sunday, which would be a scouting director's dream. I don't really know why he would go on Sundays, but that's what some of the area scouts have
said.
Maybe they
try to close him on Friday and then start him on Sunday. That's probably why. That would be the reason why. So
we'll
you could have the option of relieving him earlier in the weekend.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but that's why that would be out there.
They also have Kevin Duchesne, who's a clear number one guy. And
yeah, but then why would they use him on Saturday then?
Well, he's also just a guy that hasn't started before.
Yeah,
he needs to establish himself as a starter. So, there's, I would not necessarily jump right to the skeptical viewpoint.
Okay. I was more the Fullerton viewpoint than the skeptical viewpoint. You just see that happen. A lot of a guy closes Friday and starts Sunday or... I just have seen that happen, but you're right. It is more. I was thinking of it more from the Ted Silva point of view, but as opposed to other going to rag him out because they've actually done a nice job developing that program over the last 6-7 years in Illinois. This is not a fly by night. I just remember that the regional. Did they win the regional Fullerton or almost win it?
No, but they played well.
Yeah, I just remember the Parr brothers is where I started noticing Illinois, and they've been consistent the last 5-6 years. I wouldn't think of them abusing. I would just think of them being college baseball about it and closing a guy on Friday. But there was buzz, I guess maybe just because I did the Midwest for our draft coverage, there was buzz on Tyler Jay coming into the summer. I'd never heard the name Dylan Tate. And 98, 99 miles an hour at times. Tyler Jay was everyday Tyler Jay because they had no other left-handed relievers.
Dylan Tate was a BA 500 guy out of high school.
Okay.
He was pure projection. He was really skinny.
Aaron's report absolutely nailed it coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Fitzy.
But he's the guy who made the jump. He was kind of an 88 to 91 guy out of high school, really skinny but loose, and people were excited about the projection. He probably touched some threes occasionally out of high school, but then to be 98, 99 2 years later, Andrew Checkitz, man, the guy is really good.
I wouldn't say it's easy velocity,
no,
but
no,
it's consistent
not.
Velocity. It was every time out, was it not, Clint? Like he was 95
and
above.
Well, that was the thing. Depending upon the way that he was used, there was one day I believe it was at Wilson where they asked him to go 3 innings.
Don't.
And he had been used on an every other day basis leading up to that. And by the end of the outing, he was back down to 91 or 92. But that's kind of going to be expected of a guy who I believe has never started a game in his college career.
Yeah.
And I think he had 3 innings in his freshman year. So this is obviously a very, very long long summer for him. But his breaking ball really has a chance to be one of the better breaking balls in the entire class. It was actually a very, very inconsistent offering. Sometimes it was below average, but when he had that thing going right, it was kind of a cutter, slider hybrid. Some scouts said that it was a 70-grade offering.
Mm.
It was a true wipeout, and as John said, there is some effort in his delivery, but he has arm speed. It's electric, and he's an absolute physical specimen. It's like just reading that report from a few years ago saying that he was this kind of skinny, lean, projectable guy.
He's not skinny anymore.
He's got lots of muscle.
Yeah, he's not skinny. He's not bad.
No,
It's a good body.
I think he was 160 pounds in high school. It was really skinny.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
he's got a changeup, too, that flashes at least above average. Who knows how the delivery could play out of the rotation, but some scouts have expressed interest in seeing how it could potentially play because he's got 3 pitches.
The last couple of drafts, in every draft, if you're an established college bat with some track record and you perform either in the summer and then that spring, whether you're Chris Bryant or Colin Moran or Kyle Schwarber or whoever, you're going to go in a single-digit pick. Who are those college bats this year, either from either of these teams? I don't mean a guy who's not just a position player. We're talking about the shortstops. I mean a guy who's a bat, the corner bat. who's that guy this year? Because I'll tell you, the college national team did not have that guy who performed like that this summer, Clint. And it doesn't feel – it feels like Ian Happ is that guy.
Ian Happ's the guy. Exactly. And I had somebody say that actually this summer was, well, he's kind of like that Conforto guy that could go in the top 10 picks based on the hit tool primarily.
That's amazing. That's amazing that he's kind of the guy. But he has two summers now, and there's some – I know he's like a great athlete, but there's some. He has a little bit of everything. Strength. He's shown you some power. He's not a minus defender, at least in the outfield. He sounds like he is in the infield. Is there another corner guy though? I mean, like, because yeah, Kristen Stewart, DJ Stewart, or either of the Stewarts?
DJ Stewart. A lot of people coming into the summer thought that if he had a good summer, he would solidify himself as that guy. You know, there are still believers that think that with just a solid spring, he'll reclaim that title, because what he's done his first 2 years at Florida State really, I mean, it's been exceptional performance.
He
didn't come in great shape, and he started slow, and the swing got a little long, and we know that it's not really an ideal stance.
Right.
His ability to control the zone, and he sees pitches so well, especially on the outer half, great contact ability. I mean, if he has a good spring, he has a chance to go out pretty good. And just in terms of talking about the overall college position player crop, one evaluator said they think this is similar to the 2012 crop of college players, where we had Mike Zunino go third overall, and then I think the next position player that went from the college side was Tyler Naquin, which is 12 picks later. And there were, if I remember it, only about five or six, or four or five in total from the college position player demographic. So some of these guys are really going to have to take steps forward to really prove that, because Christian Stewart, he had a very strong summer leading Team USA in almost all triple slash categories, and all these other extra base hits and whatnot. I think he had one-fifth of their extra base hits, but at the same time, guys aren't sure where he's going to play. It's a left field profile,
right.
And
he did most of his damage against the Coastal Plain League teams. From what I recall,
yes,
his damage was done early, not necessarily Cuba or Hong Kong.
I believe 9 or 10 extra base hits in his first 5 games. It was really, really loud. And the evaluators that saw him that first stint really came away impressed. But at the same time, there is a ton of swing and miss. And the swing is just geared almost exclusively for fly balls. I think he went 5 straight games at one point without grounding.
He's in and out of the strike zone pretty quick.
And a guy with that kind of approach is generally going to struggle with these BB core bats. I mean, you know, and even if you're really strong and you connect a lot, then hey, you can hit a bunch of home runs. But generally, we see fly ball guys don't succeed in college baseball.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the track record of performance, but somebody who at least maybe has the tools to fit into this category is Chris Shaw, who has the most left-handed power of anybody on the Cape, and he had a poor freshman season, but he performed this year. He's going to have to control his zone better, but I mean, Aaron, if he goes out and really performs this year, where do you think he could fit come next June?
He could be a first-round guy. I mean, I think, like you said, I think he's the best left-handed power bat in this class. I suppose he's in the Cape that jumps out to me. Hey, he's probably a first baseman. Surprisingly held his own in the outfield, but he's a first baseman at the next level.
I got a meeting to get to, but I'm going to let you guys take the rest of this podcast and just make sure you detail Connor Barron for me. Long, this is the last time we might get to talk about Connor Barron. So.
He's got a whole nother year to go. This is it. It's the year of Connor Barron starts now.
He's been around a while.
But, I think Shaw is, right now probably fits into that third round range or so, but has a chance to move up, maybe like a Casey Gillespie did this year.
Yep. Now we've talked about quite a few different topics here. Let's focus on the strength of the college class though, which is the arms.
Yeah.
And you look at the top three players in your Cape list were arms. Let's focus on that, and let's focus on Walker Buehler, who
feels like right-handed pitching in particular.
Yes.
Right. I mean, last year we thought was very strong for left-handed pitching in the college side. This year, I don't see a lot of. I mean, there are some, but it's not like the high end lefties like we've been used to seeing. Am I right about that?
No question there. Yeah, I think just especially in comparison to last year, I mean, Tyler J might have as much upside as any left hand in this class might, because we just don't know, because he's never started a game. And Alex Young, you had ranked 11 in the class, and then after that, there are some guys who could factor into the top few rounds, but nobody right now is a surefire first round candidate. I mean, Kyle Toomey, some of these guys in the middle range. So yeah, the left handers are down significantly from last year's class.
But the right handers, you got power arms. You know, I mean, we talked about Cody. I mean, you know, Cody Ponce, another one of those big physical guys with arm strength and I think promising secondary stuff. It's hard. Division II competition. He really made his money this summer. He's got to perform this spring, and he probably will. But what do you do, you know, with that guy? I mean, it's a little bit of different valuation there for scouts. But and then Buehler, much less physical than both those two guys. But I love the fact that, you know, that he held his velocity through 140 innings this year, if you count the spring and the summer. And he was still throwing, you know, 96 miles an hour in his last Cape game for YD. And, you know, he's just – I think he's electric. The only thing he doesn't have is physicality, you know, compared with some of these other guys we're talking about. So, but neither does Carson Fulmer, really. I mean, and then Funkhauser –
he has physicality, not stats.
Right. That's what I meant. There's a difference. Fulmer's more physical than Buehler, even though he's shorter. That's a great point. I mean, to me, Fulmer – you and I have talked about this. I mean – I think there's, again, I hate throwing out. Well, I don't really hate throwing out. I love throwing out comps. I think he's got a lot of Sonny Gray in him. I mean, with just physically, they're both short, but very strong. They both have similar fastballs. They both have that hammer breaking ball. I think Fulmer's changeup is probably more advanced than Sonny's was at the same time. But Sonny had made progress with his changeup at the same stage in his development. They both have this the kind of makeup that you love. You know, both guys, you know, have had to fight the label of future reliever. Even Sonny Gray, everyone thought, oh, he's too short. He's got too much effort. He's going to have to be a bullpen guy. The command isn't fine. It's the same kind of thing you hear with Fulmer. I think there's a lot of similarities there.
I agree with you on that front. And, yeah, I mean, you look at just the history of short right-handers, and it's limitless. And, you know, Sonny Gray has been one to, you know, who has bucked the trend, but the control was a little better for him, and I think that's what, you know, evaluators really want to see over the course of extended innings this spring. Because I mean, he walked more than four per nine, and that's gonna move down into that three range, or hopefully into the two. But there's a lot of effort in the delivery. Yeah. He's gonna be one of the most fascinating players, I think, in this entire class, because we heard such a wide range of opinions when I was putting together the Team USA list. Most evaluators that I spoke with, actually every single one, thought that Funkhauser was the guy at the top of the list. He was unanimous choice there. But then beyond that, there were three other pitchers who received multiple votes for the second best pitcher. And Fulmer had the most of those, but then some people thought that he should be fifth or sixth among the pitchers on the extreme end. So there's really just going to be a wide range of opinions with Fulmer just because of everything that he brings to the table. But the stuff is absolutely electric.
Yeah, and I guess Funkhauser, you know, he's got the best combination here of size and arm strength, and you know, he's got a really good slider. But to me, it still doesn't feel like a slam dunk 1-1 guy, or no. Even close to it. It's not like he's not in the Gerrit Cole class or the you know, even though he's kind of, you know, isn't he kind of similar to Cole as far as his physicality. But Cole, I think, just had a much more electric arm, and his secondary stuff was
more
electric.
Conventionally as well. And I mean, he was taller, and I believe Funkhauser was only 6'2". I mean, there's definite strength to the body. One of the things that he's really going to have to show next spring is the improved strike throwing ability. I mean, you look at over the course of his college career, he's walked 4.5 per nine.
That's right.
He threw a ton more strikes this summer, and in many evaluators' minds, that was the separator for him over some of these other guys. But he's going to have to maintain that because, like you said, the stuff is not as electric as some of the other players who might fit into this range. So he's going to have to continue to throw strikes on a better clip.
Then, of course, you got Phil Bickford, who's already been a top 10 pick and is now suddenly eligible for the draft as a sophomore after transferring to Southern Nevada. And to me, you know, I think there's probably a temptation for people to run him up there, up to the top of the list. But to me, he's got a lot to prove. To me, he's behind all these other right-handers we've talked about, plus Michael Matuela for Duke and you know, the left-hander Kirby at Virginia. And I'd probably put him behind Riley Farrell. I think he's – or at least right next to Riley Farrell. I don't think he's necessarily clearly ahead of Farrell just because he has the track record of being a top 10 pick. You know, this guy has been electric in relief and not as electric as a starter in college so far. So this summer, you know, he came back out. He was 93 to 97. I guess he touched some 98s, depending on who you talk to. And, you know, let's see him do it as a starter. Let's see him develop his secondary stuff. There are still question marks there.
No question. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great way to think about it because, yeah, top 10 pedigree, and a lot of people are going to try to push him up towards the top, but also we have to consider that evaluators really didn't bear down on him this summer. And granted, people are going to be heading to the College of Southern Nevada heavy this spring, as much as maybe anyone in this entire class, with the exception of Michael Madwella, just because of the history there. But yeah, he's gonna have to have the breaking ball take a step forward, and you're gonna have to show more velocity.
Let's move on to a couple of these next tier leagues and just touch on a couple maybe of guys that really stood out. I mean, you did the Alaska League. John had kind of hinted at it earlier. I like Tyler Stubblefield, and he's not eligible for this draft, so I don't know if you want to focus on just the guys for this. Oh, he is. That's right.
He's eligible sophomore. Okay. He is very old.
Yeah, let's talk about Stubblefield then. I mean, to me, he's. You know, I mean, is that a guy that could jump up a little bit as a power left-hander, do you think?
I absolutely think so. I mean, he has, in talking to evaluators, he has almost everything that you're looking for. He's got the great body. He's got athleticism. He set a bunch of high school records as a quarterback. I mean, he's a consistent strike thrower. He filled up the zone this summer. And, I mean, he has a history of striking out guys at a pretty high clip. He had the third highest strikeout rate of any left-hander in the SEC last year. And the fastball will sit in that 88 to 91 range, but a reach back for 94, and the changeup has a chance to be at least an above average, if not plus offering. So if the breaking ball comes, I mean, he really checks off a lot of the boxes that you look for. So I think that he's definitely a candidate to go in the top few rounds. Now he is, I think he's going to be close to 22, if not 22, somewhere around draft day. So for a draft eligible sophomore, he is. You know, he's going to be pretty old for the class, but yeah, he's got physicality and arm strength.
You know, it's interesting that Texas A&M now 3 years in a row has tied for the most players on these summer college league lists, and that's partly because they send players to the Texas Collegiate League and they dominate those lists. Alaska, they had two on your list this year with Stubblefield and Ryan Hendricks. Then, of course, I think they just send players to the California Collegiate League. This year, I don't think they had anyone on that list, but you know they do have arms there. You know, and like we talked about Logan Taylor earlier. I like their talent coming back this year. Is Hendricks another one of those guys, Clint, that you think could be kind of an X factor to watch for the Aggies this year?
Oh, no question. I mean, coming out of high school, I mean he got quite a bit of draft interest. He was legitimately up to 95 in the spring of his year, and you know he's got the best breaking ball on their entire team. So if the strike throwing ability and the effort and the delivery calm down a little bit, I mean, he could absolutely, you know, be a key member of that rotation because the stuff is good. I mean, it's going to sit potentially in the low 90s, touching 95. I mean, the changeup has to take a step forward, but he's got a good-looking body, athleticism. There's lots like there with him.
I like this Alaska list because, you know, Kyle Serrano is obviously a big X factor for this college season. And the 2016 draft. I mean, he's got all kinds of talent, but strike throwing is a huge concern at this point. I mean, it seemed like he's actually just gone backwards. You know, all the guys on this list, I mean, Scott Hurst was a guy that you and I both really liked out of high school. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a superstar in college.
Yep.
I like Miles Jones at Bakersfield. He's been a really good contributor there for a couple of years, athletic player that can, you know, play shortstop at this level. And then Cameron Frost sounded interesting. I like Cody Nolf getting back to his freshman year at Pepperdine. Josh Meyer, you know, sounds like an interesting catcher at Grand Canyon. This is a pretty strong top 10.
I agree with you. And with some of these guys, you know, we won't see the dividends pay off immediately, but down the road, you know, like you said, just with Riley Adams and Scott Hurst, two guys that have 3 years to develop in school, yeah. You could see both of those guys, you know, with the proper maturation going in the top few rounds. I mean, Riley Adams was somebody, he was potentially in that third or fourth round range for some teams that liked him this year because he has a plus arm, he's got a good-looking body, athleticism, you can project on the power. There's a lot to like with him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's move on here. I touched on the California Collegiate League. Once again this year, I thought, you know, usually between the Santa Barbara Foresters and the San Luis Obispo Blues, you usually get most of the guys on this list. And that was the case this year, too. I mean, you know, Santa Barbara, you had John Duplantier from Rice, who I think is very exciting. You know, loose, athletic, three-pitch guy, you know, good velocity, really good breaking ball. I mean, I think he's going to be pretty darn good. And then Alec Hansen has a bazooka for Oklahoma. still learning how to pitch. You know, he's pretty raw, but boy, I mean, he can run it up there into the high 90s and has great body. Colorado kid that's got a fresh arm. Very exciting prospect. They had two Appalachian State guys on this list. Jalen Davis, who, of course, we're familiar with because he's hit home runs off Carlos Rodon 2 years in a row early in the season. But he's more than that. I mean, he's actually a very interesting prospect. He's got athleticism. He's got a chance to stick in center field. He can run. He's got some power potential. I think he's a somewhat of a five-tool guy. Actually, I'm not sure about the arm. But you know, he's a solid across-the-board kind of guy. And then Dylan Dobson for App State also had a great summer for the Foresters. I think he's going to have a huge junior year for the Mountaineers. Just a guy that can really hit, just a hitting machine, and can hold his own in the middle of the infield as well. What about the North Woods League, Clint? Anyone on that list? Any personal favorites for you?
I think Ryan Bolt. You know, he was with the Team USA during their trials, and a lot of evaluators were frankly very surprised that he did not make the team. And certainly, you know, because he is a little younger, that was probably something that weighed into the decision makers' minds with USA, you know, with picking Tate Matheny over him. But from a prospect standpoint, he really impressed a lot of people. And he was someone who probably would have went in the top two rounds had he had a healthy spring coming out of high school. But he has gained even more strength. The body looks great in the uniform. The power was significantly improved. He showed above average pull power to his pull side. Still is running well, still shows natural feel for the game and instincts. He's someone that a lot of evaluators thought solidified or, you know, positioned himself to be a pretty good pick, you know, who goes potentially in the first round in 2016. There was a lot to like there. And the rest of this list is really just kind of highlighted by some of these rising sophomores, you know, with two SEC arms factoring in that are to the top three with Zach Jackson from Wisconsin at number two, the right-hander, then Connor Jones, left-hander, Georgia. Both of these guys showed arm strength, you know, both running it up into the mid-90s, 95 or so, with good bodies, athleticism. There's a lot to like with these guys. Neither of them played a critical role for their teams in the last year, but they could take significant steps forward next spring. Zach Jackson got a significant amount of time out of the pen. I think he threw about 40 innings with a pretty good strikeout rate. He could see significantly more time. And Connor Jones, as long as the strike-throwing ability takes another step forward, he's got the stuff but to potentially emerge as one of the better left-handers, you know, looking forward to 2016 class. And Pete Alonso, the first baseman from UF, he really impressed a lot of people up there. Certainly, you want to stray away from the right-handed hitting first baseman as long as you can. But even with that, a lot of people still were just really impressed by the bat. He shows the plus raw power, some quickness to the hands. The approach was good, didn't strike out too much, and hit for a lot of power. He's somebody who could go, you know, within the top two rounds as well.
Some interesting guys in that league, and it's a shame, of course, that the folks who run that league didn't see fit to participate in our prospect survey. Very disappointed, of course, by that. But we hope that they revisit that decision in the future, be more cooperative like the rest of the Summer College Leagues. Clint, there were a couple of breakout guys that I thought were interesting in other leagues. Ronnie Dawson, Ohio State, number one prospect in the Prospect League. Very interesting athlete, you know, yeah, who can do a lot of different things out there. Talk about a breakout guy. Keep an eye on Ronnie Dawson. John wanted us to talk about Connor Barron. Number one on our Texas Collegiate League list. This guy was an unsigned, third round pick out of high school. I mean, he was a big deal, and he's been a tease. You know, he's been disappointing his first 2 years here. But the reports on him this summer were very positive. So, I mean, you know, I'm going to withhold judgment a little bit here. But maybe he's figured it out. Maybe he's just a late bloomer, you know, and for whatever reason, you know, he had some injury issues early in his career and position issues, tried to play shortstop. Of course, came in as a shortstop, wound up in the outfield now, which is where he's going to be. But he can still hit, I think. I think he's got a chance to be a solid senior guy. You know, maybe he could jump up if he has a big senior year because he does have pedigree.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on him. How about the West Coast League? You know, again, we've got incoming freshmen in this league, which seems to be
that's
kind of
the hallmark of the league.
Exactly. I mean, for years they've done a really good job getting those, especially the Pac-12 guys that are rising freshmen. UCLA likes to send their guys up there. You know, Oregon State, of course. But you know, this year we got two more pretty good ones at the top of your list with David Peterson and Sean Bouchard.
Absolutely. I mean, David Peterson, he was a very heralded guy after the showcase circuit. Certainly love a left-hander who's got some athleticism and a, you know, big 6'6" frame. And then he unfortunately broke his ankle just 2 weeks before the beginning of his season in Colorado. And if not for that, he had a shot to go in the top three rounds. He came back, but it was very, very late before the draft. I think he had a few appearances. Most of them were out of the bullpen, but he took a step forward. You know, his fastball was mostly, you know, touching in that 91-92 range over the course of the summer in the showcase circuit, sitting in the, you know, 86-89, which with a significant sink from a, you know, with some deception to his delivery, and it took a step forward. He was up to 94 this summer, and he's somebody, I mean, if the breaking ball continues to get a little bit better, because he's got natural feel for the changeup. The changeup has some late diving action to his arm side. The breaking ball comes. He's got the body. I mean, he's got the arm strength. He really's got a lot of the things you look for. And speaking with a few of the people who saw that league with history of kind of the pipeline on the West Coast, they said that they think that he could become Tyler Anderson, who went who went in the first round, I believe, in the 2011 draft of the Colorado Rockies. So he certainly has all the raw elements that you look for.
Another Pac-12 guy was the number one prospect in the Coastal Plain League this year with Cal Quantrill. You know, just kind of a real outlier in that league. You know, a guy that he's a premier talent, and he was kind of the slam dunk number one in that league. But he had a great freshman year, and he's a star. I mean, there's you know, this is a guy that has three pitches and has a plus fastball and knows how to pitch. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and big league bloodlines.
Yeah, and he threw against Team USA one of those first few days, and guys really, really came away impressed. He threw strikes. It was downhill. He's really athletic in his delivery, and the changeup was a plus offering. He's one of the better pitching athletes out there. I mean, he had a chance to rank high on any list, whether it be the Cape or USA, because he oozes potential. You love the way that the arm works, and he's extremely intelligent, a very hard worker. There's a lot to like for Cal Quantra. He's definitely going to factor in pretty heavily on some of these lists going into the 2016 draft.
One of the other things that I like about doing Summer College League lists is sometimes it helps crystallize certain college teams to keep an eye on heading into the next season. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, before Stony Brook had their big season, I was up in the Cape for a couple of weeks, and I kept running into these Stony Brook guys tearing it up. You know, Travis Jankowski and you know, Tyler Johnson, and you know, all these guys had really big summers, certainly Max Tissenbaum. And you kind of had a feeling, hey, these guys – our breakout team to watch for the next year. And this year, I think I kept running into Kennesaw State guys, you know, yep, in the Cape. Cal Simmons is just a really exciting shortstop for them, a great athlete who can really defend. And then, you know, a couple of arms up there. Travis Bergen is an interesting left-hander for them. Maryland is another team that I want to mention. I think they had five guys on our Summer College League list. And part of that is because they had a bunch of guys in the Cal Ripken League right in their backyard, but some interesting guys there. I really like Brandon Lau, for instance, the second baseman. He's had a great freshman year. I think he was a freshman All-American, but he's an exciting guy. How about Alex Robinson, left-hander for Keene up in the New England Collegiate League, number one prospect in that league, Maryland kid, physical left-hander who really took a step forward this year with his velocity. He was kind of a high 80s guy out of high school. We heard he was 92-96. This summer with a really good slider. So this is a guy that could be a real breakout candidate as a junior this year. We're looking for left-handers, Clint. We've been talking about this. There's kind of a lack of those front-line lefty prospects in this draft. That's a guy who could maybe jump up.
No question. And one of the guys from Maryland who actually did not factor onto the list, who has a chance to potentially intrigue some people come the spring, is the third baseman for them, Jose Quas, who looks good. He's athletic. He's got arm strength over there to profile on the left side. He's got some fluid athletic action, some power. Performance is something that's going to have to come for him. But if you're just looking for the athlete, because he runs pretty well, he actually runs significantly better now than he did in high school. He has a chance to potentially go out pretty good, right?
Really looks the part.
Yep.
And you know, he'll flash you reasons to get excited.
Yeah.
He needs to play harder than he did this summer. Multiple reports. that were not pleased with his field makeup this year. So that's something to keep an eye on. But if he does that, I think that the physical ability is there. He really is I agree with you, Clint. I mean, he jumps out at you. He jumped out to me at the Super Regional against Virginia. Like, yeah. That's a guy, you know, that has real big time ability. So we'll see if the makeup can match the ability.
Yep. Now we'll just transition here to taking a few questions, and a lot of the questions actually are about the high school class. So we'll just quickly run through those. Thanks a lot, Chris Stevens, for asking about the Canadian crop of high school players. And the class right now is really going to be highlighted by a few bats. You know, Gareth Morgan was a guy who went out really good last year and got more than $2 million. And this year, one of his counterparts, Demi Ormoloy, has really impressed a lot of people on the showcase circuit. He moved from Nigeria when he was 1 year old to Canada. And the upward arrow with Demi Ormoloy is as high as anybody in the entire class right now. He made a ton of quality contact on the showcase circuit. And that was something that people had questioned because he was newer to baseball. He has a great-looking body. You love the athleticism. He has, you know, a plus arm. He runs plus in the 60. So really just people wanted to see him make a little bit more contact. And he did that this summer. He had a great area code games. He hit the ball all over the field hard. And Josh Naylor, the first baseman,
yeah,
strong-bodied guy, extremely young for the class. I think he's still going to be 17 on draft day. He's somebody, if you're looking for a power profile, like we talk about Chris Shaw and some of the other guys in the college class, from the high school class, he's one of the better, you know, power bats out there. Now, he has not made as much contact over the course of the summer as he did earlier in his career, but he's got plus bat speed. You can dream on the power. I mean, he's a bottom of the defensive spectrum sort of guy, but he could, you know, if somebody really believes in the bat and the hit tool, he has a chance to go out pretty good. And, you know, it's funny this question was asked here on the 16th because this is the day that the Tournament 12 starts in Canada. So a lot of Canadian baseball players will be flocking there to the Rogers Center for a great event in the second year there. They really impressed a lot of people with the quality of talent there last year in the inaugural event. And this year, in talking to some evaluators who have a deep history with Canadian class, they think that this has the potential to be the best collection of Canadian talent because they're going to have the current year's draft class and down to rising sophomores. And this three-year collection of talent is as good as any potential we've seen from Canada in the last 10 or 20 years.
You wrote about Naylor a little bit this summer when over the course of your travels, and it certainly sounded like a intriguing guy. And you know, it's interesting that Canada is really up this year, and you know, kind of the whole upper Midwest, it seems like.
Yeah.
You know, there's that band of states that look really strong. You and I were talking about this before the podcast today. Really, I mean, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio, you think? I mean, especially the high school side, right?
Yeah, with Chandler Day, absolutely. Going through Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana. Yeah. And then, you know, Illinois has, I think we talked about the college guys there that stand out.
We didn't even mention Ryan Perez, who factored in, was it 23rd or 24th on your list? So
Perez is a legitimate prospect.
Yep.
He's not just a gimmick guy that throws with both arms. I mean, this guy, yeah, he's probably a prospect as a left-handed reliever. It's probably what he's going to be. But it's a legitimate plus breaking ball. Fairly regularly, you know, and he can manipulate it, and he's up to 93 from the left side, and he's athletic. That's a guy.
Yeah, and just kind of go back to what, you know, focused on the geographic regions that I really have a chance to be strong this year. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Nashville has a chance to be the epicenter of the 2015 draft. Just like last year, you know, we were very fortunate with where we are in North Carolina as the central part of North Carolina, with having Trey Turner and Carlos Rodon and Jeff Hoffman an hour and a half away. You know, we had three of the top 13 picks were within an hour and a half drive, and there with the two right-handers at Vanderbilt and Swanson, and then you just go up by one state, and you know, Louisville has Funkhauser and Kyle Cody, two of the players we've already discussed, and you go up just to the tip of Ohio, and you got Ian Happ there with Cincinnati. So that three-state stretch right there is probably going to be one of the strengths of this entire class.
Well, do we have time for any more podcast questions here, or we need to wrap it up?
Sure. I think we got one other question we'd like to get through. It's just about Alonzo Jones, a very athletic middle infielder from Georgia who's a Vanderbilt commit. He's going to be one of the more fascinating players in this entire class. The speed is the best in the entire class. He's had multiple events where he's ran I believe at East Coast Pro in the 60. He was 6'2" at PG National. He was 6'1", a switch hitter. And towards the end of the summer, he started to show at least average raw power from both sides of the plate. So there's a lot to like there. Premium athlete. Now, he's going to have to answer some defensive questions. Even though he has at least an average arm, maybe a tick better, he's going to profile more at second base if he stays in the dirt because of the actions and some of the instincts there. But a lot of people would like to see him, you know, see how he reads the ball out in center field, see if the instincts, you know, match the athleticism out there. Because from a tool standpoint, he is one of the toolsier players in the high school class.
Wow, very exciting name to keep an eye on. I guess Vanderbilt fans should be sweating that one.
Yep.
To answer the I think it was a viewer, Hawk Talk, asked that question. All right, guys. Well, I think that's all we got time for today. Thank you to Clint Longnecker for his incredible coverage all summer, starting with the showcase circuit. You know, nobody does it better. You get out there and you're on the road almost the entire summer, it seems like, and you come back to the office and you got to crank out Summer College League lists. And did a fantastic job, as usual, with all of those. Thanks to all of our legion of writers, interns, former interns, freelancers who contributed to our Summer College League project this year. Thanks to John Manuel for getting us started on this podcast here and then taking off, leaving us to run with it. And hope you guys enjoy the Summer College League coverage. And we're looking forward to more draft coverage on the way this fall as we look ahead to 2015. For Clint Longnecker and John Manuel, I'm Aaron Fitt. Thanks again, everybody. Till next time.